Good morning, everybody. Please be seated. We'll go ahead and call our first case, number 77551, Andrew Tobiasen versus Nevada Commission on Judicial Discipline. We have Mr. Terry representing the petitioner here, Mr. Gaila, and we have Mr. Christensen representing the, who's with you, Mr. Gaila? Mr. Bradley, I'm sorry. Okay, I looked at it. I had to represent. I see Mr. Boss, the chairman of the Judicial Discipline Commission, is here as well. Okay, Mr. Terry, you would like to reserve any time in rebuttal?
I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
You may do so. You may proceed then like that.
Thank you. Yeah. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. May it please the court, my colleagues. I want to also acknowledge the fact that Ms. Biggs is likewise present in the court today. She was courteous enough to submit, after invitation, an amicus curiae brief, which we certainly would incorporate. It's my understanding she does not wish to address the court, but we would ask the court to consider her brief.
We certainly consider any briefs that have been filed in the case, so you may proceed.
The issues that we're presenting is really a relatively simple one, and the question may arise before you as to what prejudice, if any, occurs by the commission taking the actions that they did in this situation, and I will answer that question. It's important that you see the exhibits that were attached to the amended petition for writ of mandamus, or in the alternative, the writ of prohibition, because they set out the format as to where this case was at the time the interrogatories were likewise served upon Judge Tobiasen. And I use the term interrogatories, and it appears to me the commission doesn't want to use that term. They consistently use the term questions, but what we're talking about questions or we're talking about interrogatories, if you look at those three exhibits that were attached, the commission had already made a decision that this matter was going to go forward. The investigator had already interviewed Judge Tobiasen. We did not object to that. We complied with that request, and we did it. But once we received the letter that was initially dated November 7th, and the language in there is exceedingly important because it indicates that the commission's already made a determination that they're going to proceed with this matter. But at this stage, no formal statement of charges had been filed. We recognize our duty to respond to the complaint. That is not the issue here. We will respond to the complaint. The issue is what the commission, outside of their procedural rules, even their own procedural rules, and outside of the Nevada revised statute provisions, required Judge Tobiasen to do under oath, which is to answer a set of interrogatories or forego the potential punishment, if I could use that term, of not responding, because then that would be viewed as a failure to cooperate, which could also be raised as an issue and a separate form of allegation against Judge Tobiasen. And Exhibit 3 is particularly telling because it mandates under oath that these interrogatories be responded to, and it likewise says that it cannot contain any legal argument. So not only are they directing us to respond to the interrogatories, but they're directing as to the fact that we cannot raise any legal issues in reference to those. So what that means is, before you ever have a situation where you have an opportunity to object, as you would normally be able to do under the rules of civil procedure, which guide the commission, only after a formal statement of charges is filed, you don't have an opportunity to object to these interrogatories. You have no opportunity. And it's interesting because under the procedural rules of even the commission under Rule 19, where it deals with discovery, the discovery it does not include interrogatories. It would have to be with the permission of the chairman of the panel to authorize the utilization of interrogatories. And we certainly acknowledge that they could utilize that if the chair and the commission ultimately approved that. But it's putting the cart before the horse at this point in time. The commission, in their responsive brief, points to their procedural rule 12. Procedural rule 12 does not authorize them to send interrogatories or to send questions. And even their brief uses the words that the rules infer that they have the opportunity to do this. They likewise state in their brief that they've been doing this for a number of years, and perhaps they have. That doesn't mean that it's right.
Okay. So, Mr. Terry, is it the narrowing? Well, strike that. So it would seem that the commission is trying to give an opportunity to respond before formal charges and narrow the issues. So are we hung up on the form of that inquiry, like it's interrogatories, or if they sent a letter and said, hey, we're thinking about proceeding, here's what's of interest to the commission, give us whatever information you think's helpful? Like, are we hung up on the form of that request?
I say this with great respect to the commission. When you get this type of letter, they've made the determination, or the writing is on the wall, that they're going to proceed. They've already made that determination. Simply, the investigation is done. All they're waiting for is the answer to the complaint and the answers to the interrogatories. So the decision has been made. Even their own letters, the documents that we've attached, indicate that they've made that necessary finding. Now, they do put the caveat language in there of we have not made a determination yet whether to file a formal complaint. The reality of life is when you get these letters and they've made that initial determination that you're going to end up with a formal statement of charges. And certainly the commission may disagree with that, but that's the position that we take.
Well, would a response, or did you pursue a response that says we don't have anything to add at this time? Would that be considered a failure to respond and an admission, or would it be at this time we've said what we're going to say right now and do what you will?
Be construed as against Judge Tobias. Because we are not complying with their requests. Their requests are, you will answer these questions. You will not argue the law. You will answer these questions, and it must be done under oath. So to send a general response back, I don't think would fulfill our requirement if this court says that it is a requirement to answer those interrogatories.
Can I ask you one question now? You said under oath, and I think that's where the whole crux of this is. My understanding is I didn't see anything that requires the complaint to be answered under oath, any of those interrogatories, if that's what you want to call them.
You are correct.
Once a formal statement of charges is brought, that I can understand, but at this stage, I don't see it. Where is it?
You are correct. The complaint does not need to be answered under oath.
Correct.
The interrogatories need to be answered under oath. If there is a formal statement of charges that is filed, that needs to be answered under oath.
But the interrogatories, that's pursuant to the Rule 12. Is the basis for having that done under oath?
I don't concede that it is pursuant to Rule 12. The word interrogatory and the words, you may submit a set of questions to the judge or you are directed to judge to answer these questions, is not part of Rule 12. The only place that talks about the potentiality of discovery is in Rule 19, but that again is with me, the chair, the normal discovery process.
But I want to be clear, there's a distinction between the complaint and the formal statement of charges.
Yes.
And is it the case that your client does not object to answering the complaint, to responding to the complaint, or
yes.
not?
We will answer the complaint. That is not the issue.
Okay.
So what's the distinction between doing that and answering
these? In conjunction with the complaint, we likewise, answering the complaint, we likewise have to answer the interrogatories.
Right. And your specific objection is requiring that those answers be given and be given under oath is not authorized by either statute or procedural rule and crosses the line between investigative and adjudicative and amounts to a due process violation? Is that your point?
You've hit the issue right on the head.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Justice Kagan, I think you had a
thank question. You. I think you covered it.
Okay. Mr. Terry, go ahead.
I'd like to reserve.
You may do so. Mr. Dialla. Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Paul Vila. I'm the General Counsel and Executive Director of the Judicial Discipline Commission. I'm here on behalf of the Commission to respectfully request the court deny petitioner's writ and allow the Commission to complete its investigation of Commissioner. There is only one question before this court, and that is whether the Commission can ask written questions during an investigation. That is the only question.
Under oath?
Yes, under oath.
What's the source of authority to require that during the investigation? What do you rely on that establishes your prerogative to do that?
We rely on Code Rule 1.2, which requires integrity in the process, which promotes honesty. Rule 2.16 requires a judge to cooperate and to be candid and honest with the commission. And Rule NRS 1.260, which requires officers of the court to cooperate and also to furnish information and reasonable assistance to
the court. What consequences attach to a failure to respond to the interrogatories? Let's say the judge answers the complaint, responds to the complaint, and there's the bold print letters that say failure to respond to the complaint can be deemed an admission of commission of a disciplinable offense, which is troubling to me, but leave that to one side. What happens if the judge says, I'm not going to answer these interrogatories at this time. We need to cross the line over into the adjudicative side of it. Would you take that refusal to answer the same way you take a refusal to respond to the complaint as a deemed admit?
No. The judges have a duty to respond to the complaint under the statute. And as long as they do so, they've met their obligation. We issue questions or interrogatories to help the commission.
But what if the judge says, I'm not answering the interrogatories? What happens?
Well, the commission could take that into consideration in failing to cooperate with the commission in an investigation. We are still in the investigation stage of a judicial discipline commission.
But Mr. Dyler, your letter explains to the judge what the consequences are, and they seem, the way I read the letter, the judge has defaulted. And what I'm troubled by is imposing a default on a judge during the investigative stage. It seems like there is some confusion here about the terms we're using. Complaint is a defined term under 1.4263. The filing of formal charges is a specified term. But these are stages, and what appears to be occurring here is that questions, as you characterize it, or interrogatories, as Mr. Terry characterizes them, are being interposed between the complaint that started the process and the filing of formal charges. But the consequences of not responding seem to be those that would be imposed after filing of formal charges. So I think Justice Pickering's point is, or question is, important. What's the basis in the rules for imposing the consequences spelled out in your letter for not responding during the investigative stage under oath to the questions that have been propounded?
I just go back, Justice Hardesty, to Rule 2.16 and the duty to cooperate under the code and to furnish information.
But if a judge chose not to respond, or perhaps the response was the response Mr. Terry mentioned in response to questions by Justice Stiglitz, I don't have the information, or I don't need to respond right now, or that's my legal position. Why can't the judge do that at this stage? I mean, and by the way, if the judge, if it was shown that the judge was not cooperating in the investigation, doesn't that provide an independent basis for the commission to pursue filing of formal charges as opposed to the consequences that would befall the judge if they declined to answer questions?
Are you saying if they fail to cooperate in that, will that be an independent?
Sure, wouldn't that be an couldn't that be an independent basis of a code violation by the judge?
It could be, but it has not. The commission would take that into consideration, as you said, in the adjudicative stage, after a trial on the merits, when the evidence is presented. But as far as to go,
I have another question for you that's been troubling me. You get a letter like you send, and it says the commission has decided by clear and convincing evidence that there's enough here to proceed. And based on what I read in your papers and what you said at the outset, we just need to get these additional questions answered under oath, and that'll help us decide whether to go to filing of formal charges. Well, when you tell whether it's a judge or any party that the commission has decided that there's clear and convincing evidence to support the complaint, how much more does it take to get from that point to discipline? I mean, why not just file the charges if the commission has sufficient evidence to demonstrate by clear and convincing evidence that a judge has violated the code? Why wouldn't you just go to filing formal charges? It seems like if you're the judge, responding to the questions is only going to make matters worse, not help you.
Well, the commission in making a determination prior to requiring the judge to respond to a complaint, it is a reasonable probability that there's clear and convincing evidence. So they have not made a determination, and I agree. It's close.
That's a pretty strong standard in the law.
You didn't even say preponderance. I mean, it's pretty.
They come together and they vote. Is there a reasonable probability that there's clear and convincing evidence? And if it is, the judge is required to respond to the complaint. This next process of asking judges questions is for the benefit of the judge. The judge, this is more due process.
Well, but if that's the case, then why is it not their prerogative to say, I decline to answer the questions? You've gotten to the point in this investigation that there's a reasonable probability of clear and convincing evidence, proof of my committing a judicial canon violation. Why are you putting the judge in the position, still in the investigative stage, of compelling a response in advance of the formal charges? That's the piece of this that's worrisome to me. Well, do you follow the question?
Yes, I did. Thank you. And this stage is very important to the commission. We have to obtain the facts. And there are many situations where the commission receives answers from judges in this process, and the answers, the complaint is dismissed, or counts are dropped from the formal statement of charges if one was filed. This is an extremely important process for the commission, even though they voted that there's reasonable probability for clear and convincing evidence. They want to hear from the judge.
But at this point, I mean, you're saying you want to do this for the benefit of the judge, but there's a big hammer over that judge, which is, if the judge doesn't respond, they're going to get an additional charge for not cooperating in the investigation, even though the investigation has progressed to the point where it's hovering on the brink of being a formal statement of charges. It's the last, you know, it's sort of the final Hail Mary for the judge. Well, if the judge declines it, they're in worse shape than they were before.
If the judge declines to answer the question, if the judge responds to the complaint but does not want to answer the questions, then the commission would have no choice but to go to a formal statement of charges. They've already made the determination that there was a reasonable probability. This was kind of the last chance, the last bite at the apple, if you will, for a judge to explain his or her actions.
So can the judge decline to answer the interrogatories under oath without any negative consequence attaching to that?
I'm not prepared to say there wouldn't be a negative consequence because a judge does have a duty to cooperate under the code. In fact, this court in Davis
right.
stated that a judge in that case exercised the Fifth Amendment right. And this court found that it was had a duty to cooperate under the code, and it does subject the court to further discipline.
Let me ask you another question here, because the amicus brief suggests that even the requirement that they answer the complaint is problematic because at that point it's crossing over into adjudicative function, and there is the penalty attached that failure to answer the complaint shall be deemed to be an admission that you did the wrong alleged and that the wrong alleged is disciplinable. As I read the amicus brief, they're saying, no, that's an unfair consequence in the investigative stage to attach to the complaint. Is that something that, do you require that answer to be under oath? Could you say, I don't think this states a grounds for judicial discipline and leave it at that in answering the complaint?
That could be a proper answer to a complaint.
Okay.
That could be. And if they don't want to answer the questions, then the commission has no other further information to go on and would likely, under the circumstances.
So Mr. Donnelly, in this case, my understanding is that the judge responded to questions. She was interviewed. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. So whether it's in this case or whether it's in cases generally, why does the commission need to propound questions and require answers under oath? Why can't the commission circle back and say, here's a series of questions, additional questions we have for you based on what we've seen thus far? What's wrong with that? Why can't the judge then respond or not respond as they deem appropriate?
The judge certainly can, and the commission is not always required to be under oath.
Uh-huh.
They started this a number of years ago, and in a case with the judge, who I'm not going to say the name, the commission had to reach out to this judge 3 or 4 times because of conflicting information and testimony, and it took over three to six months. So they started the process of, well, do it under oath, and once they did, we never had a problem before. And to answer your question, it does promote honesty, and a judge should be honest and candid during this process.
But why can't the commission assume at the outset that in the investigative stage, the judge recognizes the same obligations under the code that you're pointing to? You have a duty of honesty, you have a duty to cooperate. So we have some further questions based upon what we've heard thus far, and you told them the areas that you wanted her to further comment on. Why not do that?
The commission can do that. That would be fine. If this court does not like the fact that these questions are asked under oath,
mm-hmm.
then we can do it as you suggested. Yeah. We're still getting the information, and it still can be used if there's a trial on the
sure.
merits for impeachment purposes, et cetera. I don't think there is an argument that this information cannot be used at
right.
a trial.
I don't think there's anything in the code that prevents the commission or its investigators to go back to the judge once or twice to clarify issues that come up during the course of the investigation. But what is of concern in this writ, and it is fairly narrow, is the requirement of responding to those questions under oath, where the code itself doesn't seem to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, furthermore, if you don't answer, the consequences that are provided for in Rule 19 under discovery are now on you. You've defaulted before the formal statement of charges. It seems odd that there'd be a default before there's a formal statement of charges even filed.
Well,
what do you say about that?
As far as, well, there is precedent for that. I mean, these particular rules do conform to rules throughout the country. Now, these came from the model rules of judicial disciplinary enforcement, which this court adopted. If you recall, the procedural rules of the commission were adopted by this court many, many years ago. The commission didn't draft this particular rule, but there is precedent for this. in the legislative history, not only in Nevada, but in throughout the country. But to address your question specifically, these questions do not need to be under oath. The most important thing is that the judge cooperate with the investigation. We want to get to the bottom of this.
But your letter says they must be under oath. That's the problem. Exhibit 3 says...
Yes, it does. And again, I just go back to under oath, it promotes honesty.
Sure.
And but if this court does not like that it's under oath, the commission can still ask written questions. I don't think that is a question that you're debating, whether we can ask written questions during an investigation. If the sole issue is judges should not have to answer these questions under oath, I think the commission, that would be acceptable to the commission.
Well, I think a consequence, going back to my initial question, is before the formal statement of charges are brought and you're addressing the complaint, and you have these interrogatories presented to you, you can choose whether to answer them or not, is what you're saying we could do. But it's clearly indicated that if they don't answer them at this preliminary stage, then the allegations are deemed as true and discipline proceeds.
We still need to have a trial on the merits. It's not the commission is not going to just take that failure to admit or answer questions and use that as and just go to the discipline a part of it. We have to have a trial on the merits. They have to prove it by clear and convincing
evidence. It's failure to answer the complaint that can trigger the admission of charges, not the failure to answer the interrogatories, as I understand it.
That is correct.
Well, but under the statute, even failure to answer the complaint does not have that consequence. And in fact, that part of the statute was apparently taken out in 2009. Are you aware of that?
The part of the statute, which part of the statute?
In NRS 1.4667, it used to have a provision that a failure to respond to the complaint would be deemed an admission, and that was changed as part of the Article 6 changes in 2009.
If I recall, the procedural rule, in the procedural rules, it is retained, I believe, in procedural rule 12.
Right. So after the statute was changed and the legislature decided not to have that consequence in there anymore, but it still remains in the procedural rules.
But the Article 6 Commission reviewed both the statutes and the procedural rules. They were both under a microscope. And, in fact, the Article 6 report to the legislature in 2009 specifically referenced this particular section and this particular rule. So,
but Mr. Sarnowski's testimony was really clear, and the legislative history is clear, that when they, further to Justice Kadish's point, when they took the 12.3 type of consequence out of the statute, that it was because they didn't believe at the investigative stage it was appropriate to be attaching an admission of misconduct that's actionable and a committed violation just for failing to answer a complaint in the investigative stage. That language, there's legislative history that supports that that language was taken out deliberately. Now, I'm not sure how much that's an issue in this proceeding because the petition seems to really focus on the interrogatories and the answers under oath to them. But it's of concern to me that, you know, you have the investigative and adjudicative. And we're kind of really scuffing that line in here with you don't answer this informal complaint short of formal statement of charges, and if you say, I'm not answering that because I don't think it's legally sufficient, you could be held to have admitted the offense alleged and that it was improper. That's troubling. I think your pending legislation would solve that.
AB 20?
Yeah. It talks about giving the judge the opportunity to respond rather than requiring.
The problem the commission has with that is that we're not able to complete our investigation. We're not able to...
Yeah.
And we can complete the... As I said in previous questions, the commission just wants an opportunity to reach out to the judge and finish its investigation. If it doesn't... If it's not under oath, that doesn't change anything. If we take out the provision regarding if you don't respond, again, that doesn't change the purpose of this investigation stage, which doesn't end upon the filing of a commission or an investigative report. It ends when the commission has determined whether to file a formal statement of charges. We just want to get to the, we need to get it right.
Yeah, I appreciate the commission's goal as expressed in your papers and as you've expressed, Mr. Dyla. But if a judge elects to be less than candid in the investigative stage or messes around with facts, or and I'm not suggesting that that has occurred in this case, but what I am saying is there's a point at which the judge starts to make their own bed and they can lay in it, and the commission should just file and go. Mm-hmm. I mean, I appreciate the point. You want to get to the bottom line, and that's all in the private sector. But you know what? If a judge is not going to respond or wants to treat this as an adversary proceeding, and so I'm going to hold on, or I'm not going to tell you all the facts, or I'm not going to respond under oath, I'm going to be less than candid, or I'm going to give you false information like the example you mentioned a moment ago, then really the commission should pursue the formal statement of charges. I mean,
and it does. And that's,
enough is enough. I mean,
yes.
So that's what I was saying. In this case and in other cases, you circle back, you ask further follow-up questions. That's probably understandable in any investigation. The judge provides those follow-up responses. Why can't we assume, for purposes of the investigative stage, that the judge is meeting his or her requirements under the statute or under the code, that they are cooperating, they are responding? If you have information that they're not, you should file on that. I mean, that's just that seems to be the construct of the rules in the statute here.
And that's, I believe, that's a reasonable interpretation.
I think we've covered that. So thank you very much, Mr. Dowd. Appreciate your presentation, Mr. Terry. Let's see how much time you have. We used up a lot, and add a little time to you to kind of, we'll add an additional 2 minutes to Mr. Terry's time. And Mr. Terry, I just have a question to start with. I know you have a lot to say, but just kind of following what Justice Hardesty said, when the commission investigates, it may be a frivolous claim that the commission gets, but it has to investigate, and the judge certainly should want to have an opportunity to say, wait a minute, there's no basis for this complaint. Here's my position on it, and I don't think you should file any type of formal charges, because that's all private that time, because the public complaint is then when it comes out in the media and all that is filed. How can we preserve that right for a judge to get his or her point across to the commission in the investigatory stage without, you know, having some sort of questions you have to answer? How would you recommend we approach this?
I think that the approach has to be to develop the rapport with the commission so that you can have that line of communication. And I can tell you that I am aware of situations where the commission has gone to this level and then been told by a judge that, for example, it's outside the time period that was involved, and they acquiesce to that. That is not what this case is, however. And right, as we address this court, just as we would address the commission, Judge DeBison holds her position in high esteem. She understands she has a duty to cooperate. That is not the issue here. She understands that her obligation is to uphold the integrity of the judiciary. That is not the issue here. The issue here is that the commission has overstepped their bounds by mandating that these interrogatories be complied with under oath, or she suffers the consequence. We do not agree with that position.
So I'm taking your comment to be, if instead of the letter you got, the letter had said, here are the things that are listed that we're concerned about, and we'd like further responses.
We'd comply. The other suggestion would be, you know, Judge DeBison acquiesced to the interview. That was never an issue. No issue was raised about that. She recognized the duty to cooperate and a hopeful expectation that as a result of that interview, this matter would be closed. It didn't turn out that way. The commission is welcome under the rules to come back and re-interview her. That is not an issue. The issue is the interrogatories that are before the
court. But let me test that for a moment. She has a duty to be candid. That includes a duty to be truthful. So what's the difference between under oath and not under oath when you're talking about a judge? And Mr. Darla makes a good point that whether it is under oath or not, an oral statement can be used as impeachment were the charges to be filed and it go ahead and then she testifies something contrary, it could be used to impeach her.
Or even it says it must be under oath. We have to comply with that. I recognize what Mr. Dial has said today, but that is not what the letter directs.
Yeah.
And if she does,
yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, if she doesn't comply, then the results can be held against her. Justice Hardesty asked a question in reference to additional charges for a failure to cooperate. And my
what about, but is there a meaningful difference between under oath or not under oath for a judicial officer responding to an inquiry?
No, and I think it can be utilized both ways for impeachment purposes, etc. What we take exception to is that the position of the commission is mandating that it occurs, and that is outside the parameters. One of the interesting questions I heard a justice asked today dealt with the pending legislation in reference to the commission. And maybe that will answer the question. But unfortunately, we have to work with the rules that we have at this current time, and the rules do not authorize interrogatories under oath, nor that they be held against the judge for non-responding. And with that, we would submit it to the court with thanks.
Mr. Terry, let me ask you one question.
Sure.
You mentioned the limitations, for example, like a judicial discipline offenses also have limitation periods like most civil cases have for torts and everything else. If there, let's say there's a situation, maybe there's some merit to a complaint, but it's beyond the time limit, and no formal charges have been filed, how should the judge deal with that? Or in your view, how do you proceed and get that message across to the commission?
Well, I think that would be upon the judge and her counsel, if she has counsel, to notify the commission that it's either whatever the unique issue is, it's outside the limitation period under the hypothetical that Your Honor gave me.
But to be clear, the sole relief you are seeking in your writ is a prohibition against a requirement that the answers be under oath.
And to answer the interrogatories.
Okay, so you don't want to answer the questions?
Correct.
Or have the answers be under oath because you think both are beyond the scope of the commission's authority in the investigative, pre-adjudicative stage.
Correct, Your Honor.
And with regard...
One further thing, I'm sorry I interrupted. Don't let the consequences of not being used against the judge. So there would be a third consequence.
Just what I was going to say. Okay. Thank you.
I have a question. Mr. Terry, so I want to get back to whether this is form or substance. Because you've indicated that the judge has a continuing duty to cooperate with the investigation.
Correct.
Both to talk to the investigator and to answer any questions pre-filing that the commission may have or provide additional information, correct?
I don't know that I went quite that far because I made a distinction between the interrogatories, which are the issue that you have here, Your Honor.
But you agree the commission can get more information.
Yes.
And the judge has a duty to cooperate with that.
Yes.
So the question here is really the format and whether there is a penalty for non-cooperation.
Correct. The three answers I gave to Her Honor, Justice Pickering, in reference to the consequences and the fact that it's under oath, etc.
But we keep focusing on the consequences of not answering an interrogatory. So let's forget about an interrogatory. The commission says we need more information in this regard. Is it your position that the judge can say, I'm done playing with your investigation and not suffer any consequences?
Not in the way that Your Honor just stated the question. No, we would have to continue to cooperate.
Okay.
If we felt that there was bad faith or something like that involved, it might be a different issue, but that was not the way the question was posed to me. So no would be the answer.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
But if it were, in your estimation, as her counsel, turning into a fishing expedition looking for some, and I'm not saying this is what's going on, but your point is counsel should be able to say, look, this has nothing to do with the complaint, and as far afield, we're not going to answer that.
That is correct.
Do you think that's within your realm of prerogative here?
That is correct. And then what would be the consequences thereafter? The next move would be up to the commission, quite frankly.
Yes.
Yes.
By all means.
But we concur with Your Honor's analysis.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Terry. Thank you, Mr. Dial, Mr. Bradley, Mr. Terry, for your excellent arguments and briefs and the amicus briefs. We appreciate that being submitted as well to the court. We will take this case under submission at this time.